Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 209. And my guest today is Alexandra from England, with a dream that she said she picked the dream. And as you know, if you haven't listened to this, or I should say, if you haven't listened to The Dream Show before, that when you volunteered to be a guest on The Dream Show, we sort it all out, we organise when the recording's going to be, we phone your landline or Skype or whatever the technicalities of the recording are, but I don't know anything about the dream until the moment that we start recording. So we've just finished recording and I'm here to put the beginning of the show on, and so I know what the dream is now, but of course I didn't at the beginning. And Alexandra had said to me, I contacted you to be a volunteer on The Dream Show, a guest on The Dream Show, because I had a dream that I wanted to share. But right up to last night, she said, I was beginning to think, oh, I think I know what this dream is about, and I'm not really sure whether I want to talk about this on The Dream Show or not. Maybe I should pick another dream. But thankfully, she went with her gut feel and went with this dream, it goes very deep, and I'm sure a lot of you will resonate with it and pick up a lot of, not only tips about how to interpret your own dreams, but maybe some personal resonance with things that have been going on in your life as well. So it's a wonderful dream to delve into, and I'm not going to say any more, other than if you haven't been to my website for a long time, go to janetereza.com. Or if you want to learn how to interpret your own dreams or how to be a dream therapist, go to my other website, which is dream-academy-online.com, or find me on social media. But right now, here's Alexandra. Welcome to The Dream Show, Alexandra.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. How are you this morning in your area of the world?
I'm very well. It's a lovely sunny morning and I'm happy to be talking to you.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm happy to be talking to you too. I love having guests on the show. So, as always, of course, I know that you have a dream and I have no idea what it's going to be. So, open your parcel, reveal to us your dream.
Okay. Well, I gave the dream a title and it's called I Don't Care About My Brother. Mm-hmm. Unlike in waking life, in the dream, I have a brother who I have not seen for 20 years. He lives in a room in a cellar, and I decide I should visit him. Somebody escorts me down the stairs into a dark corridor lit in red. His door is on the left at the end. It's a large, heavy wooden door, painted black with a small square window set into it with a strong protective grille over the glass. I knock on the door and he lets me in. It's so dark in there. The room is thick with dust. My brother's name is David. He is short with dark curly hair, a beard and little round glasses. He is also thick with dust and cobwebs. He appears as though he's been buried in the rubble like the survivor of an earthquake or a bomb. The room is sparse, there's no windows, and there's a log burner in the back corner with a fire, a sofa where he sits, and a chair for me. Between us is a square table. On it lays a cat, who seems to be half dead, and two dead mice. I'm so shocked at the state of the cat. I pick it up and see that it's just about still alive. I must save it. I feel the best thing I can do for the cat is feed it my own breast milk. Though I know I have none, I feel sure that once I begin to feed her, the milk will come. The milk quickly returns and the cat suckles ravenously from both sides until they're empty. I realise my brother's house is ridden with mice, and the cat is essential to him to catch mice, and the cat has no other source of food other than the mice. If the cat dies, my brother will be overrun with mice, and the two dead mice on the table were the cat's dinner. The cat is covered with lumps and very sick. I can feel them as I stroke her. I try to tell my brother what a bad condition the cat is in. He wants me to stay with him and help him. He too is in a terrible condition. He begs me to help. It seems that he has no one else. But I can't stay, even though he desperately needs me. I only seem to care about the cat. I tell him I can't do anything for him, that I have children now. Perhaps you've heard about Oscar, my disabled son. I do feel bad to leave him in such a mess, because I know he needs help, but I just don't feel any obligation or responsibility towards him. I just don't care enough to help. I do care about the cat, though, and I decide that when I get home, I must call the RSPCA because he's perpetrating animal cruelty. I feel then he will get some help too, through the proper services. I say goodbye and I leave with the door shut behind me.
And that's the end of the dream, obviously.
Mm-hmm. That's the end, yeah.
Wow, that's powerful. When did you have this dream, Alexandra?
It was on the 31st of May, so it's a couple of months ago now. Mm. But it was one that sort of stayed with me really hard. And I've kept sort of a few notes about what was happening that day and around that time. I think because I work with my dreams quite a lot, parts of it I can get to, but there are so many parts that I just have absolutely no idea.
Yes.
Hence my coming to you.
That's fantastic. We'll definitely get there. Just one little bit I slightly missed at the beginning. Did you say that you do have a brother called David?
Or no, I don't have a brother.
You don't have a brother at all? Okay.
No, he's totally imaginary.
Yes, yeah. So there's, the kind of difficult bit in the middle, I guess, is the bit about caring for the cat more than the brother.
Because that's not like me.
No.
You know, if I had a brother, well, I would never do that to anybody.
No. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, we have to keep pinching ourselves when we're looking at dreams and saying, you know, even though parts of this feel literal and, you know, I wouldn't treat a human being that way, that we still are in the land of symbolism. And I think and so to keep bringing yourself back to everyone and everything in the dream is an aspect of myself. Therefore, to be concerned about the cat is to be concerned about a part of myself as much as to not be concerned about my brother. So the cat's not just a random animal. It's actually, you know, something that's really a key part of the dream. But let's start at the beginning. Let's come in softly and look at the fact that, you know, the beginning of the dream often sets the theme for what it is that we're actually exploring. And the fact that at the beginning of the dream, you haven't seen your brother for 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, those numbers can be specific in a dream or they can be sort of general, but I guess because you have worked with your dreams a lot in the past, you've already looked at what was happening 20 years before, have you?
Yeah. Mm. Yes. And actually, I hadn't considered it until yesterday when I thought, what's she going to ask me? She's going to ask me what happened 20 years ago. And then, you know, there was one major event 20 years ago, which was very sad. So, somebody very close to me got attacked, and that was the only sort of major thing that I can think of. That, you know, that was exactly 20 years ago.
Yes.
So I think it may be that.
Yes, maybe that, and how you felt about it, and what may or may not be resolved from then. Just out of interest, was that a male or a female that was attacked?
It was a woman who got attacked.
It was a female. Okay, right. So we're probably going on that. I'd say, you know, I love that. That what would she ask me? Because I quite often find when I work with people, you know, privately, they'll often and regularly, they're often squirming the chair and say, so I thought, what would you ask me about this? So I've got my answer.
Why didn't
already.
I ask myself? Yes. I don't know why it didn't occur to me until then.
But it's great. That's really fantastic. So we could look at other options, but I feel too that seems
it's
to resonate.
It's the one that comes out to me. You know, because I was very young then. For the most part, I was a very happy, carefree person 20 years ago.
Was that,
there were sort of no major events otherwise.
No, was that, looking back, was that, do you think, one of the first really sort of traumatic things that you observed?
Probably as an adult, yes.
Mm. And roughly how old were you then?
I would have been 22.
22, yeah. So the brother in the beginning of the dream has been locked up for 20 years in the cellar. So let's for the moment go, because both you and I feel that this represents what's been locked in the cellar probably as a result of how you felt or something else that happened around the time that you this friend was or person was attacked. So we won't go too deeply into that. We'll just remember that. Now, when you said the cellar was lit in red, what kind of red was that?
I know the walls weren't painted red. It was kind of like, you know, when you go into a dark, like a photographic dark room, you know, it was that sort of, everything just looked black and red, like it had a red, I don't remember seeing a red light bulb, but it had that sort of really low level visibility, I suppose, and everything was red. It was, so, yeah, a deep. You know, a deep kind of blood red, I guess.
Yeah, so infrared sort of. So that kind of feeling like you go into a photographic dark room and you arrange to just have enough light so that you can see what you're doing without spoiling the film.
Yeah, exactly.
So this may be the sense here too. Now, the cellar is actually in the dark, but for some reason, when you had this dream on the 31st of May, you were ready for perhaps the first time to go into this dark space and just bring in that tiny amount of light, just enough to begin to see what's happening without turning on the major lights. Like, I'm ready to look at something, but just a little bit, just a little tiny wee bit.
And there's that sense of developing as well, isn't there, when you're in the dark?
Very good, yes. So we're going to see what may be developing from your unconscious mind and coming into consciousness. And the fact that the door was at the left and the end too, so you've got, that's most probably the left, probably being your inner world, your left side. When you painted the picture of the protective grill on the door, that felt to me like a prison door. Was that how it felt?
Yeah, it was. Or, in fact, I've been thinking sort of, you know, do I know a door like that? In our town, there used to be like a sort of seedy massage parlour. And I think the doors were sort of pretty much like that. You know, the front was all painted black and it just had this sort of little tiny window on the front. It sort of somehow reminded me a bit of that. It was like that, prison door or some sort of, you know, just enough room for somebody to look out and see what's going on out there.
Yes, and be protective. But we may or may not discover why it also reminded you of the CD massage parlour, which you never went into.
No.
But you imagined what went on behind the doors.
Probably.
When the person was attacked, was that a sexual attack?
Yes, it was.
Yes, so there may or may not be a connection there around that. So anyway, what is absolutely wonderful, Alexandra, is that you not only find yourself there in the dream, but you're prepared to knock. It's not like you think, oh, you know, find yourself there and there's a bit of light and what I can see. You actually actively knock on the door. You ask to go in. You're ready.
Yeah, I want to see him. I want to see him. I remember this sense of, like, you know, it's sort of been long enough. You know, I want to see you again now.
Yes. So what kind of name is David? What kind of... Do you know people called David? What kind of...
Well, there were two aspects to it. Now, that day that I had that dream, the previous day to that dream, I was having a conversation with a girlfriend of mine, which I think is quite relevant. We remembered the first time a few years previous when we'd had a conversation about dreams, and she had told me the dream she'd had on that night, because she didn't believe that they had any relevance. And her dream was about David Beckham and the size of his manhood. And I suggested to her that, you know, I said, well, I wonder what that means. Maybe it means your male side is underdeveloped. And she went, ooh. Really? Actually, perhaps you're right. There's something in this. So I did wonder whether perhaps the name David came from that conversation that day.
Yes.
But I did also have an uncle who was called David, who was a person who, he didn't live in very nice circumstances. He was quite unwell. He didn't look after himself very well. So I think there's perhaps a connection there as well.
Yeah, I feel it could be both, because the Uncle David thing describes a little bit the kind of circumstances that your dream put David in.
Yeah, but it does. Yeah.
I don't know whether you noticed when you were talking about David Beckham there, and you said to your friend, you remembered saying to your friend, well, maybe it was an underdeveloped side of yourself.
Yeah.
And you've just told me that a photographic studio is a place where development goes on. Yes.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So there may be, you know, I mean, our unconscious mind is very, very, very clever. At these associations, so there may be a sense there of developing. Ah, yeah, because you particularly you described your dream, David, as being short.
Yeah.
Yes, not tall. Yeah. Not tall like David Beckham.
No, he was smaller than me, and sort of quite sort of small in his manner and everything.
In a dainty way, or in a less developed way?
No, in a sort of I know, sort of downtrodden way.
Downtrodden, yeah. So not, you know, David Beckham could hardly be called downtrodden, for example.
No.
Yeah. So there may be sort of underdeveloped in that sense. From where do you go from downtrodden and go through a developmental process, or come out of the photographic black and red room, and what do you grow into? So there may be some sense here of what is developing within you from 20 years ago.
Okay.
And you may have got the name David from the discussion the day before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Buried in, as if he'd been buried in rubble in a bomb, covered in cobwebs. So you've got this feeling that although it looked a bit like a prison or a bit like a CD massage parlour, there's the feeling that he actually got there through through an event like a bomb, you said.
I don't know. I didn't feel sort of like that had happened to him. That's what he looked like. You know, his place was dusty and dirty, but it wasn't covered in rubble. It wasn't like the bomb had gone off in his place, but he was just covered in detritus, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. Covered in detritus. And then he was on the sofa and you were on a chair, which looked the most comfortable seat to sit on?
His sofa was sort of lower than my chair. Probably his. I'm sort of suddenly thinking that, you know, where he's sitting, there's room for another person.
Mm.
But where I'm sitting there isn't. There's just me.
Mm. Yeah, I got the impression when you were saying, you know, talking about that he's on a sofa. Oh, that's quite big. And then, oh, you only got a chair?
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of thing I sort of get all the way to. Just, you know, there were all these opportunities where I could have done something rationally.
Yeah.
I could have done something. You know, I could have sat next to him, but I didn't.
Mm. And in the same token, you know, you said there was on the sofa, there was room for more. So we're back to that theme of in development or possible development or underdeveloped or developing. There was room for more. There was potential there.
Yeah.
And as you say, one of the potential in an afterthought was that you might have sat on the sofa.
Mm.
But on the other hand, it was in dream terms, it was quite good because you sat opposite him. So there was facing something or facing an aspect of yourself. Now, what really intrigues me is that there's the cat on the table and then there's two dead mice. And yet you wanted to feed the cat breast milk. And that later on in the dream, you realise that the cat was actually its source of food, and what it needed to eat was the mice. And there were loads of mice, and yet there were two dead mice on the table that it didn't eat. So why wasn't eating the two dead mice, and why did it prefer the breast milk?
It wasn't eating the dead mice because it was so deteriorated by then that it was half dead. It couldn't eat anything anymore.
Right, so it needed to go right back
to being like a baby. I suppose like a baby, you know, you could put, you know, a sandwich next to a baby, we won't be able to eat it.
Yes. So it became deteriorated. It was not just undeveloped, it was actually deteriorated.
Yeah, it was almost dead.
Mm. And when you fed it the breast milk, how much did it revive?
Yes, almost yes, almost back to full health, I would say. Mm. It was walking around again.
Mm. And what kind of personality did that cat have once it was walking around again?
I don't remember greatly interacting with it. No, I didn't interact with it very much.
Mm.
It was I remember it just walking, just doing its business around the room, going about its business.
Bit returned to being an independent, uninterested cat, basically.
Yes, yes, it wasn't interested in us. It was just doing its thing.
So again, even though you used the breast milk to revive the cat, you know, we feed our babies so that they can develop.
Yeah.
So we've still got this sort of the food appropriate to development rather than just nourishment, to feed food appropriate to grow rather than to keep something alive. Hmm. And yet, even though the cat was back to supreme catdom again, you noticed that it still had lumps and it seemed to be sick.
Yeah, now there's some other things to mention there. There were a couple of other things that were happening on that day or around that time. Very sadly, I lost my best friend a couple of months ago, but at that time she had cancer. We were still waiting for her to go into the hospice any day at that time. She didn't feel like it was going to be the end yet, and perhaps she would go to the hospice perhaps for a little bit of respite and then come back home again.
Mm.
But I had suspected that perhaps if she went in she wouldn't be coming home again, which she didn't.
Mm.
So we were waiting for that to happen. So there was this sense of there being somebody sick around who had lumps. But also, I expect you know from we follow each other on Instagram, don't we? So
yes.
I expect you know I make these little sort of totems for my divination set, and I was carving a little piece at that time, which was a sort of dual aspect piece to represent male and female, and on the top half it has what I've called the milk goddess, which is like a sort of female figure with cow's horns, and then on the bottom half it has a phallus to represent the male, and I was carving that on that day. I was still working on that, so I think there were threads of that coming through perhaps as well.
Absolutely, both of those things together. So let's look at the second one first. Why were you carving that particular totem? What had motivated you to do that one? You know, what was
I like, if I'm carving something from a natural piece, I like to sort of think about what it's made of. This was made of a piece of cow's horn.
Mm.
How I can sort of bring aspects of what it's made of into the representation. So because it's is a cow, for me that's sort of a domestic, nurturing, sort of motherly creature, so I wanted to bring a part of that to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the phallus actually came completely by accident. When I had carved the whole thing and I turned it upside down, I went, oh look what I've done. So that was sort of a happy accident, really. It worked quite well.
That's great. So consciously, look what I've done, but unconsciously, haha, I was carving a phallus all along here. Yes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, so how do you feel about that piece now when you look at it?
I love it, but often I find it harder to connect to the male part of it.
Yes. And in a sense, in the dream, apart from the cat, putting the cat to one side at the moment, you wanted to connect with David. You were opting after 20 years to go and connect with David. But at the end, it was like, I don't really care. You've got to.
Yeah, I just couldn't. Yeah.
Yes. So it's possible that feeling, even though since you've made the totem, you have felt that you can't connect so much to the the male energy, the phallus. Unconsciously, you may have been onto that at the time of the dream already.
Yes, perhaps.
So we may or may not be back to, you know, the David of your dream being the undeveloped, downtrodden male aspect of yourself.
Yeah, you know, and that's sort of what that was the line I felt for a long time that it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm not sure that's all. That's the whole picture.
You think there's more there?
David.
Yes. Yeah. We'll find. We'll get more.
Mm.
David's Michelangelo's David was carved of stone.
Yes, I just thought that myself.
Yes.
The ultimate man, isn't he?
He is the ultimate man, and carved like, you know, the ultimate totem as well, maybe as
isn't he?
Yes. So you've got back to the totem. You're obviously totally happy. The milk goddess is you, and you were happy in the dream to be feeding breast milk from both sides to the cat, and it made a difference. So you've got that lovely motherly thing, and you reference in the dream. You reference your disabled son Oscar. You mention him by name in the dream.
Yeah.
Oscar is also a statue. You win an Oscar at the movies.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yes, he's very proud of it.
Yeah.
They're named after him.
Yes, so there's another totem maybe in here as well.
Yeah.
But you do reference at the end your nurturing and your need to essentially feed and nurture your son.
Yeah.
If we go back to the cat, you know, often an animal in a dream often a part of ourselves will appear as an animal rather than a person in a dream when we're looking at a more instinctive part of ourselves, or a part of ourselves that is a little bit more unconscious, a little bit more difficult to name. So it's not like, oh, this is like a human facet of myself. We're going a bit more animal kind of feeling, not quite.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the cat and your feelings about the cat are probably more important than your dismissal of the brother in the dream because at the end of the dream you feel that the brother's going to be okay, because in a strange kind of way you're going to call him out by bringing in the RSPCA, which for our international listeners, the RSPCA is the charitable body that cares for cruelty. Well, it's the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're essentially going to call out your brother for being cruel to the cat, but in doing that, you know that the RSPCA are going to find out about David, and they're going to call in the proper authority. So actually, you're being, to use an English expression, and working on the C, cruelty, Royal Society of Prevention of Cruelty, you're being cruel to be kind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not cruel.
No,
I am sort of quite like that, in that I do like things to be sort of done properly.
Mm.
And I can imagine in real life I could be like that. I might think, well, you know, I don't have the proper skills to help you. But I know somebody who can.
Yes.
You know, you need to see somebody professional. And that is kind of my nature to be like that as well.
So do you apply that to yourself as well? You know, when you come up against things that maybe, you know, may or may not be, for example, helping and being there for your friend as she was dying, or whether it's other challenges with your son, or whether it's challenges with yourself, do you reach out to professionals to help you?
Yeah, I do. You know, I do everything I can. You know, a lot of those sort of caring, helping, I have got a lot of caring, helping skills. That's something I think I'm really good at. And I do as much as I can for somebody, but I won't sort of get to a point and then just keep suffering. I know when I need to say, actually, I need some help from somebody else now.
And
I do that.
That's absolutely fantastic to hear, and so rare too, and so sensible and courageous. And when you think back to the time of the dream, especially with your trying to assist your friend in that awful situation that I'm sure many of us can relate to, where the cancer patient thinks they're going in for respite, and
yeah.
we all know that they're not. It's that last clinging to hope kind of phase. Do you feel that kind of thing was happening for you then about, you know, can I, Alexandra, cope with this myself, or do I need to reach out for someone to help me? You know, I'm helping her in particular. Was there something that you needed to help there?
She had wanted to stay at home, and I had really wanted to be a part of her care team if she had chosen to stay at home. So there probably was a sense of thinking, well, actually, this is going to be handed over to, it would obviously have included professionals at home as well, but, you know, this is going to be a different scenario now, because she would be an inpatient rather than having outreach care.
Yes.
So I wouldn't have been able to help her in the same way.
No doubt you helped her by going in and visiting her every day.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I stayed with her, yeah.
So unconsciously, though, you know, there may have been some reprimand of yourself there, and you know, you've got that sense in the dream of bringing in the authorities, as you say, bringing in the RSPCA, because they will bring in the right people.
Yeah.
And in a sense, what you've said there is, even though she went into the hospice, there was a feeling there that, and then the right authorities and carers would be involved.
Yeah.
She'd be well looked after.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm. But dreams are all about ourselves, you know. So although it's about your caring and worry and concern about your friends and the conversation you'd had with a friend the day before and all the other things in the middle of this, the big symbol, I guess, in the dream is the cat, is the cat that's sick, you know. And although you've related the sick cat and the lumps to your friend dying of cancer, the cat still represents a part of yourself.
That's just a lens, isn't it?
Yes.
I can see that.
And perhaps, you know, having a friend going through that would have resonated with a part of yourself that has not got cancer, but a part of yourself that feels at death's door from time to time, you know, exhausted, whatever.
Yes.
Bringing up that cat feeling, and the cat that really should be independent. How do you feel when you think about, is there a part of yourself that you feel should be more cat-like or is more cat-like? You know, how does the essence of cat sit with you?
Well, this is something I've thought about quite a lot, because for a long time I thought David was my sort of male self and the cat is my female side. I adore cats, and I've always loved cats from when I was really, really little. I think if I think of a cat as a symbol, I think of them as sort of intensely feminine, because they sort of have this air of mystery about them. I imagine, you know, Egyptian cats, they're sort of like, they have this knowing, they're quite sort of, you know, the way they move, they're quite kind of sensual creature, aren't they?
Yes.
They're sort of mystical and they've got all, you know, the independence, they've got all those sort of things wrapped up in them for me.
Now, this sounds like you're describing yourself.
Okay.
your knowing, your sense of mystery, your mystical nature, your sensuality, your independence, because, you know, you've just described to us, for example, your beautiful carving of the totem. So, you know, we know straight away. I mean, I've seen your work on Instagram and it's fantastic. It's beautiful. But for listeners listening in, you know, the fact that you are involved in carving totems tells us straight away that you have a mystical nature, a knowing nature.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. The fact that you choose for your art something sensual like carving tells us you have a touch, texture, sensual nature.
True,
yes.
Yeah.
The fact that you've researched the cat and the knowing, it tells us that you have a knowing nature as well. All of these things. So, you know, that aspect of yourself, and I guess as a child, you ever since childhood, you love cats because that's how you saw cats. You know, different cat lovers will be attracted to cats for different projections of themselves that they see through the lens. They see themselves through the lens of cat. You've always had this attraction to cats because you've always been developing, and here's this word again, this female, this nature within yourself, knowing, mystical, sensual, perhaps independent, ancient to some extent. And and doubling that in the dream by being able to feed this with your breast milk is like the ultimate symbol, perhaps, of, or maybe one of the ultimate symbols of the feminine, is being able to breastfeed and nurture.
Yeah, it feels that way, doesn't it?
But the cat wasn't well in the dream. You brought it back to wellness, but she wasn't well. So, you know, given what was happening to your friends and other things going on at the time, in what ways might all those aspects of your feminine side or your female side or your mystical knowing side have been ailing at that time?
Well, I think obviously, I felt, there was the sense in the dream of, I must save the cat. It's dying. I must save it. Mm. So that I think that sort of links very literally to my friend's illness. I would have loved to have been able to save her. But I'm wondering if there's more of a connection to what happened 20 years ago, and perhaps there's a part of sort of my own femininity that's sort of ailing and very poorly because something very terrible happened to somebody close to me, and it really gets in you, especially when you're a young woman, and you change.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I think that's my underneath feeling.
Yes,
horrible as it is to come to that realisation.
Yes,
I think that may be the core of it.
I totally agree. Now, the fact that it was right there at the beginning of the dream, and the fact that it wasn't until just before you spoke to me that you thought to ask yourself that question, what happened 20 years ago, is something that you didn't want to look at.
And, yes. and there's the red light and the door.
Exactly.
All of those things.
And your readiness to knock on the door. And it was going to be, you got there before me. You're so good with your dreams. It was going to be my next place to take you as well. Let's now go back 20 years and let's, bring in the authorities. So what your friend was going through and what you were going through with that conscious or unconscious feeling of, I want to save my friend, even though I know
I can't. Oh, and I just thought of something else, actually. It happened. I remember that this person, prior to it happening, there would have been an opportunity for them to have knocked on my door, which didn't happen, which I always felt quite bad about that, because if they had have knocked on my door, perhaps it wouldn't have happened.
Yes. But there's in no way can you feel bad about that because it wasn't your decision to knock on the door.
It's natural to go, if only.
The sliding doors,
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, are you sort of saying, I guess in many ways, that what happened to your friend 20 years ago, it was a feeling that you wished you could have saved her, but you felt powerless to save her?
Yeah, of course.
So, as well as your friends, just skipping from 20 years ago to present and back in, as well as that feeling with your friend that you were powerless to save her, what within yourself at the time of the dream might we begin to think, where you might have had a feeling of, there's a part of myself or my femininity or my mystical knowing nature that I feel, it may be wrong, but I feel powerless to save her?
I think it's sort of the sense, similarly about the brother, I just do. I don't know, maybe it's that. Maybe there's a part of me that doesn't care enough. Isn't that awful?
It's awful and it's extremely human and we all do it.
Yeah.
Why might you not care enough?
I don't know. I think you sort of get... Perhaps it's because it's so long ago. Perhaps I'm stuck in my ways. Perhaps it feels too big, so it's easier not to. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And if we look at
maybe
that,
that's why I shut the door at the end.
Yes, you shut the door, and yet, you know, at the beginning, you open the door, you knock on the door,
yeah.
And yet when you shut the door, although part of you says I don't care, you have actually put a solution into motion. You have called in the RSPCA, and you know that proper care. You know he's going to be saved, don't you? At the end of the dream.
It's like I make a start, and that's true. Actually, I have at times thought, okay, I'm going to make a start. I'm going to try and tackle this. Mm. You know, perhaps I'll go and see a therapist or something. And I have made sort of little steps, but then I haven't gone all the way through with it.
Mm.
I've made a good start, and then things happen in life where it becomes expensive, and then you think, oh, you know, I'll do a bit more later on, and then you don't.
Yes.
So maybe there's a sense of that, I know I need the proper services and I make a start, but then I just say goodbye and shut the door.
Yes. But to some extent, knowing that you've set something in motion, at the end of the dream, your unconscious mind at the end of the dream is saying, but I've set something in motion, he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yes, and you,
yeah.
And the cat was going to be okay. Was the cat going to be okay long term because you'd fed the cat?
Only if the RSPCA came.
Yes.
Because I felt like the cat was dying because of him, because of David, because he wasn't caring for her properly.
Mm. So part of you, that's David, that's underdeveloped.
Yeah.
And may or may not relate back to 20 years ago as well.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't care enough to nurture in an ongoing way the knowing, mystical, female aspect of yourself.
Yeah.
Where actually the finger is pointing at the moment at the male side.
It's the debris, isn't it? David took better care of himself, and he sort of cleared all that debris off and perhaps sorted his house out a bit.
Mm.
He might be in a better place.
Mm. Now, he's been there for 20 years, so remember, David, even though he's the male in the dream, he directly relates to, we have decided between you and I, that he directly relates to the what happened to your friend 20 years ago.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think even his name, even when I connect that to the conversation with my friend about her David Beckham, it's got this sort of sexual aspect to it somewhere.
Yes, yes. So what did, because of the sexual aspect and the fact that you thought that the bars on the door reminded you of the CD massage parlour in your town as well, do you feel, are you conscious or not, or might there be an unconscious part of yourself from a sexual point of view that has been suffering from debris from what happened to your friend 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, I was really young when that happened. You're sort of discovering that world and, how much fun and exciting and, liberating it is. And then something awful happens to someone, you think, actually it can be something really, really dreadful as well.
Yes.
And, it painted things in a horrible way for a period of time, which probably hasn't completely ever disappeared.
Mm. But having said that, your dream has come up after all these 20 years. You've been willing to knock on that door and switch on that little bit of red light because something, you've become strong enough or experienced enough or ready enough to be able to go there, which you haven't been able to go to before.
Yeah, it's not something I'm unaware of. It is something that at the back of my mind, I think, I'd really like to deal with this. at some point. But it, I don't know. Yes, yeah, somehow I never seem quite important enough.
Yes. We're all here to tell you.
Yeah.
And you're there to tell you.
So. Yeah, probably because I've got children now.
Yes.
Have you heard about Oscar?
Exactly. Exactly. You say it at the end of the dream, I have other responsibilities, which of course you do.
Yeah.
But you also have responsibilities to yourself, you know, the ultimate thing of I can be the best mother, lover, friend, person, whatever, if I look after myself as well.
Yeah.
And it comes back to the cat as well. You know, you said that the cat, I'm just looking back to my notes, knowing mystery, sensual. Sensual also relates to sexual, I guess, in many ways as well.
Yeah, I think most people associate that with a cat, don't they?
Yes. And you know, I guess another layer with your friend dying of breast cancer, you know.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Oh, sorry.
Actually, it was a female cancer, actually. Yeah. It was ovarian cancer. So, yeah, it was a female cancer.
I must have picked up that and got the wrong organ.
Yeah, that's
so,
okay.
Yeah, so that sense of the femininity, the female side.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's quite a sad connection, actually, isn't it?
But although it's a sad connection, Alexandra, what I'm getting from this is that being there for your friend as you were in every possible way that you could, you knocked on the door, you knocked on her door, you were there for her, you did everything, and that it was that put you in a state of readiness to go back 20 years.
Yes, that could well be true, actually, because... yeah, you know, actually, I mean, this hadn't happened yet, but I ended up staying with her right till the end, and I actually sort of felt afterwards like, if I can do that, I can do anything.
Yes. So taking that sense forward, you're taking it backwards, as in I can now, therefore I can now face this thing that's been with me for 20 years and into the future. I can do anything into the future as well. I can look after the cats. I can look after everything. I can not be superwoman, not that kind of I'm going to do everything, but I can keep my life in balance.
Yeah, and actually that was, you know, that was one of the reasons we were friends as well, is that we had a lot, you know, as you tend to find with really close friends, that, you know, you have a lot of similar... experiences, feelings, approaches to things, and it was something that she personally had tackled and that she encouraged me to do as well.
Yes, that's fantastic. So in all of this, we then got to ask, well, why is David so small? Why does David need developing? Why, you know, he represents, as we've been discussing,
he feels like the biggest enigma in this to me.
Yeah, because he's not a female, he's a male in the dream.
Yeah, and that's why I find him so difficult. I really want to know what part of me really is David.
So if we think about that and think about your male side... you know, when you were carving the totem, you accidentally put the phallus in there. Your unconscious mind went, got to have some male in here. if you just because, you know, it often happens that when you're actually talking about a dream, you're talking about dream symbols, your unconscious mind is really on board because you're really engaged in it, because that is the language of your particular unconscious mind. So in this moment, if we go back to what happened 20 years ago with the beauty of hindsight, what stunted your male side because of that?
I think my sort of opinion of men changed. And I think I am quite male in a lot of ways. Now, you know, I like carving, for instance. I'm quite a practical person. But I think that perhaps I don't really like to recognise that as much as I could.
Yes.
I think I'm very engaged in a lot of female pursuits or activities, partly because I'm not just a mum, I'm a carer as well, because my son is disabled.
Yes.
Also because I, you know, I'm very interested in divination and sort of mystic arts and art and craft and sort of expressing myself. I think I identify much more easily with sort of the female aspect, although, you know, I am very male too. I'm quite sort of solution focused. I think I'm quite courageous often.
Yes.
But I find it harder to say that I am.
So you have just said that you are to everybody listening.
Yeah, I think
so. That's a good step.
I am.
what would happen?
People tell me I am.
Yeah. What would happen if you know, remembering that although we sometimes feel there are limitations in life, there aren't really, there are just different ways of doing things. What would happen if you maintained all those beautiful female world aspects of yourself and your male side also developed further and you stood up more, as you say, not developed further? What would happen if you stood up and acknowledged your male side, the full power, your full power, really? Yeah. So friends tell you you've got it. You know you've got it.
Yeah.
It's what you're saying is, I don't stand up and acknowledge it. Like, there's room on that sofa. And there may be a pun on sofa there. You know, you've come so far.
But I think he would be less emotional about things, and he would just probably say, I deserve this and I'm going to go and take it. Which I'm not terribly good at.
Yeah. So what, as well as that sort of personality or coping or management approach to life change, what would change in your life if you did that?
Oh, I see what you mean. Let's assume that this is relating to this sort of sexual, sensual aspect. I think I could overcome some of those the debris of what happened, which is probably David. Perhaps that's David's debris. That's the cobwebs and the dust that's all over him. I think I could overcome some of those scars that have been left by that incident.
Yes. Simply by acknowledging simply by acknowledging that you do have a strong male side.
Perhaps. I think it would be nice to be sort of less emotional, to know when it makes good sense to use emotion and when sometimes you need to say, come on, let's get on with this.
Yes. Which a cat would do.
Yes. Yeah.
Cats know when to walk away and get off the lap.
Absolutely. Yeah, they don't do anything unless it's on their own terms, do they? And unless they really want to do it and they know it will serve them and be good for them.
Yes. So although, you know, I think you're right onto it, Alexandra, you know, and you've got that in the end of the dream, that the female part of you has woken up from that dream and go, oh, how could I have done that? How could I have walked out on David? But in the dream, it felt like the right thing to do, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, because, you know, I just felt like I didn't have the skill, you know. Well, I mean, I say I felt like I didn't care enough to help. I didn't. But I also felt like I just didn't have the skills. You know, I felt like, you know, I haven't seen you for 20 years. What do you expect me to do about it?
Yes. So there's a sense of, although it's like, it felt in the dream like, I don't care about you, I can close the door. What you were really doing was, I'm not engaging fully with my emotions that are going to keep me here feeling sad and sorry for you.
Probably.
I'm going to take an action.
I'm detached from you by now.
Yes.
This is somebody else's job.
And in doing that, you were exerting your more powerful male side. You were stepping away from your emotions of it and taking a solutions-focused approach, bringing the RSPCA, getting the right
carers. That's true, because lots of times when I've thought about this dream, I thought, you know, when I fed the cat, you know, we're talking about simple stuff, but, you know, I could have fed David. I could have helped him too. I could have brought the cat back to life. I could have brought him back to life, but I didn't. And you sort of afterwards you have those things, but I didn't use any of those emotional responses, which is what the sort of female part of me would have done. It would have said, okay, well, you know, I'm going to help you and look after everybody here. But I didn't. I said, well, actually, I can't do this. So I'm going to let somebody else take over who's got better skills than
me. Yes, that's true. Who would be a part of yourself as well. And also, though, I think one other quite important thing is the wraps, is that because you... A, fed the cat to stop it from dying now, and B, brought in the RSPCA to look after the cat was then going to be able to keep the rats away, and that was going to be good for David.
Yes.
So you actually did take an action that by a chain reaction was going to be good for David.
Yes, that's true. I can remember thinking how important that was, because if I don't save the cat, that, I always felt like actually that was the only thing I could do for him, was to sort of... maintain this sort of ticking over sense of, well, you know, at least he won't be completely overrun with mice, which actually, being overrun with mice is a common dream theme for me that I don't have very often anymore. But when I was much younger, I used to have it a lot, of these sort of ever-breeding mice that take over.
Did you have it before your friends had the tragedy 20 years ago?
Yeah, I had it from when I was a young teenager.
Yes. Did you get to the bottom of that and work out what the mice
represented? Well, I did use, when I was at school, I used to be one of the people who looked after the mice in school.
A mouse monitor. And,
yeah. And sometimes they would escape, as they do, which was incredibly stressful when you'd have to try and find them, catch them in big classrooms with cupboards and things. And I think it was sort of a stress dream of, how can I catch all the mice?
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, you would get, I can remember one summer, I had some at home, I was looking after them, and they had some babies, and I didn't know what to do. There were suddenly all these other babies, and, you know, they eat them, and all sorts of things happen. And it was sort of like this stress dream of, everything's overwhelming with the mice.
I have to, I have to give you my ultimate respect. When I was at school, there was no way I couldn't have touched a mouse, let alone go and rescue. Oh, that's just unbelievable. So you've got two things there. One, as you said, you associate them with being overwhelmed, all the mice in the dream can be being overwhelmed with all the things that were happening at the time of the dream. But also that the mice, your job at school, when you first had the mice overrunning recurring dreams, was to be the monitor, was to keep the mice in the cage, to stop them escaping. Yeah. And in many ways, what happened 20 years ago until now, until this magical now dream in May, was something that you were trying to keep all the debris, all the mice in the cage. So in the dream, part of opening the door is, and there's all the mice. That's all the things that I have been trying to not look at. I didn't
want
to look
at. Keep in the cage on the window.
Exactly. Well spotted. And the way to deal with those mice, if we're looking at those mice in this scenario as being the stuff from 20 years ago that you've been trying to keep in a cage and not look at, the way you deal with that in the dream is to give health to the cat, make the cat healthy. That's why it was so important. The cat was going to address the mouse problem, sort it out for you. That's why the cat was more important than David.
Yeah.
And the other reason the cat was more important than David is, if you look at from a dream analysis point of view, as you know, that, you know, you're looking at the cat has a deeper unconscious symbol than the people in the dream, as we mentioned earlier. It's the deeper you can go and address or transform something in the unconscious mind, the more that's going to ripple through, and all the Davids and everything are going to be sorted.
Well, David says, I don't matter, look how I live. I don't matter. I don't care about me.
Mm.
So there's but the cat is the interaction between me and the cat is something completely different, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
The cat and the mice, me and the cat and the mice is very different.
The female side of you, the cat, and the mystical knowing part knows how important it is to sort this out. The male side of you has given up and says it doesn't matter.
Yes, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's it.
During the course of the discussion, you've realised that the male side does matter because your friends have told you that he's there. You know he's there. So there's actually no work to do other than just acknowledge it.
Yeah, it's funny because I sort of always think of like that kind of central part of me as being female part, but actually it probably is a very male part, isn't it?
Yes.
I haven't really thought about that before.
We're kind of running out of time.
I
think we've got there. So if you, in order to sort of work out the dream alchemy, although I'm sure your mind's beautiful, creative mind's already buzzing with it, how would you, we've got lots of things from this dream, but how would you summarise in a couple of sentences what rises to the surface for you?
Well, I think I probably gave myself quite brilliant advice at the end of the dream. You know, perhaps I'm perpetrating animal cruelty to myself.
Yes.
And I need to go to the RSPCA.
Yes. I love it. What I would...
Yeah, that is the animal part of me, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. The cat's got to be well. Yeah. So there are several possibilities from a dream alchemy point of view. Mm. One sort of longer version would be to do an artwork dream alchemy where you perhaps create a different totem, a new totem that encapsulates this, that brings the cat, whether the totem is totally cat or whether the totem is partly cat and I guess...
That's a lovely idea, actually, because I don't have anything that represents cat in
okay,
my
that's
bowl of things, which is such an important animal to me.
Yes. And simply in carving or, you know, creating the sculpture, you could maybe see if this sits well with you, maybe think of yourself as the male Michelangelo creating the new David as well, even though it's a cat.
Mm. Actually, I'm about to go on a carving course in 2 weeks' time.
Perfect.
That's what I need to take with me.
This is your project.
Yes. So we're going down into an ancient mine to choose our own piece of stone.
Oh, brilliant.
Exactly.
As in Michelangelo's days, that's what they did, wouldn't they? Didn't they go to the quarries to get the perfect piece of stone?
Yeah.
So this, if you can bring that into the alchemy, this sense of, although I am creating a female piece, the cat has a male-female energy to it, and I am bringing out my male qualities in being the Michelangelo sculptor in picking my piece and bringing this out. I'm bringing the David into full size. Also, I know we've got to sort of tie up very quickly because of our time, but remembering with dream alchemy to include a transformed emotion. So what emotion do you feel that you need to transform from this dream?
The sense of him not caring about himself, sort of, it's not even disinterest, it's just...
Yes.
What's the word I'm looking for? That carelessness he feels about himself.
Yes.
It's preservation, isn't it? You know, I'm struggling. I want to nurturing, isn't it?
Nurturing is the opposite. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you can't find the word, just find the opposite. Yeah. So we want you want to in the alchemy when you choose your stone and feel your Michelangelo Alexandra in her power, male power, creating your cat piece. To as you're working with it and as you're choosing the stone and as you're sculpting it, to have the feeling of nurturing. This is a nurturing thing that I'm doing.
Yeah.
I feel, but also the most important part. Hey, I feel so nurtured doing this. This is very nurturing for me, Alexandra, to do this.
Yeah.
It's not me nurturing. Yeah. I am nurturing myself in doing this.
Yeah.
The David in me is growing to full size. The mice are under control or eaten up.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for doing most of the work. I was just there alongside you.
No, you pick worked your way to the core of it very well.
Thanks for being a wonderful guest on the Dream Show, and I look forward privately or publicly to seeing the totem that you create as a result of your alchemy, and to hearing how life goes for you from here on.
Thank you, Teresa Jane.
Well, that was wonderful, wasn't it? And, you know, it's left me with a feeling that I wish I had the artistic ability to make totems and sculpt beautiful things. Wouldn't it be wonderful? And I'm sure many of you listening are perfectly capable of doing those kind of things, and I'm not. But it does occur to me that, you know, whether we're brilliant artists or whether we're, you know, more of the sort of a splash of paint and a stick man kind of artist, I do like the idea of the totems, and maybe there's some things to play with there, or maybe there's a future blog there that I don't know, but some things to play there with our dreams and encapsulating some of our dreams in a dream alchemy sense as totems that we can then, you know, have a bowl and have our totems in it. And when we want inspiration or we want contemplation or we want meditation or we want mindfulness, we close our eyes and dip into our bowl and pick one or two totems out and see how they relate to each other. Just food for thought, something to end on. Once again, the websites that you can go to, janetheresa.com, if you want to listen to all the episodes of The Dream Show that have ever been, if you want to find out about my services, if you want to find out about my books, if you want to study dreams with me, all of that, janetheresa.com or dream-academy-online.com, or find me on Instagram or Facebook. The next episode of The Dream Show, episode 210, will be out on the 9th of November 2018. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, simply go to janetheresa.com, go to the main menu, go to podcasts, and on the drop-down box, you'll see Be a Guest on The Dream Show. It's something that you volunteer to do, and it's a wonderful thing to do because, as you've just listened and enjoyed, we all get so much out of listening to someone share their dream and explore it and go deeply into the interpretation and the dream alchemy. See you next episode. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.